Okay, God, it's your turn. My name is Paul Guzzo. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is Friday Night Lights in Apollo Beach. We moved from Gibsonton. Make note to Lindsay. And I have a sponsor named John. He lives in Virginia. And I sponsored a couple guys in the room tonight. And a couple guys not in the room tonight. And this is an awesome program. I tell you what, you know, you hear people say, you know, I'm grateful to be an alcoholic. I never understood that when I first got here. And I really, it's in my heart now. I understand what being a grateful alcoholic is, you know. If I wasn't an alcoholic, I would never hit a bottom, come into the rooms, and crawl into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous desperate, and be willing to take some actions that were necessary to let me have a spiritual awakening, which lets me sit up here tonight and talk to you guys, you know, and girls, and sponsets. I have a couple sponsets in the room, too. That's what I call my wife's sponsors. Sponsees. I call them sponsets. I got a couple of them in here. So, sponset one, two. There's three or four of them here. Anyway, what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I think I can't really see the clock. I think it says quarter of eight. I don't want to. How long do I have? 30 minutes. Okay. I'll probably get 25. Got to get Bill the rest of the time, you know. What it used to be like is I like to drink. You know, I got to start off with that. I'd like to drink a lot of alcohol, you know. And my first drink, I was about 15, 16 years old. And it was with some guys who was kind of like peer pressure. And I guess I was in junior high school then. And we went out behind the school, and I moved around a lot when I was a kid. My father worked for McDonald's Corporation. He was like a real estate guy, and he went around buying properties for McDonald's. So we lived in Maryland, in Baltimore. That's where I'm really from most of the time. And then we moved to New Jersey. We moved to Virginia, back to Baltimore. So we moved around a lot, and I was always trying to fit into to schools. You know, in high school age, trying to move around, moving once a year. It's hard, you know. It's hard to try and fit in new places. There's a lot of peer pressure, you know. I always felt like a square peg trying to fit into a round hole. Always. I always felt like an oddball. And, you know, I still do to this day sometimes. You know, it never goes away. You know, we know how to treat it today on a daily basis, but that feeling kind of stays with us. So this one particular day, I remember it was Parkville Junior High School in Baltimore, and these guys said, "Hey, why don't you join us out back?" And I didn't know what they were going to do. And they went out there, and they had a little flask of something. It was called Mad Dog 2020, if anybody remembers that. And they took a couple of hits on it, and I took a couple of hits on it, and didn't do anything, and walked back into the school, and it did something, you know. And I felt dizzy. I felt, you know, and good, and I felt a little sick. I felt all kinds of stuff. But the thing that really stuck with me is I felt like I could look at you, and I could talk to you, and I felt like I fit in, like you like me now. And before I took that drink, you know, I felt like you didn't like me, like there's something wrong with me. But drinking, I immediately fell in love with it the second I drank it, and it was no mystery. My dad's an alcoholic. He was an alcoholic. He's deceased now. I guess he's still an alcoholic. I guess once you're an alcoholic, you're always an alcoholic, dead or alive. But people ask me, "Do you think you have alcoholism? Is from your family?" And I don't, you know, I don't know the answer to that. But if I was, if you forced me to give you an answer, I'd probably say yes. There's a good chance it's genetic. You know, I have my dad, my grandmother, I have uncles, my mother's side. It's all over my family, alcoholism. And so I would say I got the, like Chris R. says, you know, I got the genetic bullet. You know, I got hit with it. And my brother and my sister, they're not alcoholics. You know, I have a brother who's 5 years, a year younger than me, a sister who's 5 years younger, and they're not alcoholics, you know. But I am. So what's that tell you? So I don't know what the answer is, but I would say I am. It is genetic. So I had this drink. I loved it. I fell in love with it. It seemed like we moved 5 minutes later. You know, it wasn't 5 minutes later. Probably a year later we moved. But I was hanging out with these guys, and I was drinking regularly. And we moved to New Jersey. And I'm 15 years old, 16 years old, and I was playing football, high school football at the time. And moved to New Jersey. I started playing football on a team up there, and I fit in doing that well because I had a lot of anger. If you have a lot of anger, you can play football. And I was full of anger, so football was a perfect fit for me. And but the problem was I always felt there's, you know, you got these preppy guys and you know, the jocks, and you got the We called them the heads back then, the party animals. I went to the party animals. You know, I didn't like the jocks and stuff. Like I didn't fit. Like I didn't feel like I fit in with them. I felt like I fit in with the losers, I guess. You know, we seek a lower level sometimes and make ourselves feel better. And so I went with that crowd, and I dropped out of football. I really didn't go to school anymore. I'd go to school in the morning, we'd go to a class, and then we'd be in the woods behind the school for, you know, hours on end drinking. Come out of the woods, time to catch the bus, get on the bus, go home, and then just do it all the time. That, you know, I'm not going to talk a lot about my drinking tonight because, you know, I drank well, and everybody in this room probably knows how to drink. Am I right? Is that a good guess? Okay. I think I'm in the right place tonight. After we moved to New Jersey, that's where I graduated high school, was from New Jersey. And we moved back to Baltimore. This is where things really started to change for me, because my dad's bottom really sped up now, and I was 18. We were all sitting around the house, kitchen table one night, my mother, myself, my brother, my sister. My dad wasn't there. He was down in the basement. And my mother went down to see what he was doing, and all I remember is hearing this loud scream when she went down there. And she was like yelling for me and my brother to come down. We went down there, and my dad was trying to kill himself. He was trying to drink paint thinner, so he didn't have a circular saw or anything. He was trying to cut his arm off, but he was trying to kill himself with paint thinner. And it was a pretty hairy scene. It was pretty nasty. We called the police. They came over. Ended up getting Baker acted. He ended up going to Father Martin's Ashley Treatment Center up in Maryland. He went there for a month, and he came back. And I remember we went up there for a family little outing, and I went to one meeting, sat in one meeting. And that might have been where I got a little mustard seed of faith to begin my journey. We listened to some speakers, and he came back, and he told us all about the. He was Mr. AA. And that last, what I remember, because I wasn't really that involved in his life at the time, because I wasn't a very good son. I was out doing my thing, you know. I was too selfish to be concerned about my family. But he came back to Mr. AA, and he went to a lot of meetings. My mom went to Al-Anon, and I remember them having friends over occasionally, and I think that lasted, what I hear from listening to talk to my mom, it lasted about a year of their lives. And he never went to AA again. And he stayed dry. He wasn't, I don't think, in my opinion, he wasn't in sobriety anymore. He was in sobriety. He was he moved away to a little town called Aberdeen, and he was a big shot. He liked to be a big shot. And he liked to be a big fish in a little pond. So he moved to this little town where he had a little business. But he never drank again. He was the most miserable SOB you'd ever want to meet. He wasn't happy. He was always angry, always wanting to raise his voice at people, always wanting to belittle you. That's what I remember growing up. That's what I remember. And I also remember thinking back then, I'm never going to be like him. I'm never going to be like that man. And little did I, you know, later on in my life, as I found out, I turned out to be exactly like my father. I mean, like carbon copy. So, speed it up. It's a fast forward button. I joined the Navy about a year later, and I was in the Navy for 4.5 years. I was a hospital corpsman. I did a pretty good job in there. I drank all the time, because in the Navy, drinking is very acceptable. They actually promote drinking. I mean, they want you to drink, I think, in the Navy. And did a lot of drinking, and I began my profession, what I do now. I work in operating rooms now. And I began my profession as one day I was I was on call as a cast technician, okay, putting on cast. Troy knows what that's all about. He's got a cast on his leg tonight. But I was on call this weekend, and I was in the little corpsman's room, which is a little bunk place where you got TV and a bed and the bathroom. And I was on call, and I was totally hammered. It was like early in the morning. It was from the night before. I was just trashed. And the doctor comes in and goes, "Hey, all my residents and my fellows and my PAs are all out at a conference. I need somebody to come to the operating room and help me hold retractors for this fractured hip we got to do." I'm like, "Huh? You got to be kidding me. I've never been in the operating room before in my life. You know, I didn't like the sight of blood." So you know, I went down there with him, and he scrubbed my hands up for me, and he gave me a retractor. Actually, he made this big incision first, and blood went everywhere. And then he made this incision, and he gave me a retractor, and I put it here, put it there. He said, "Now stand there." We stood there for like 2 hours. Oh, he's fixing the hip, and I was frozen. I was so nervous. And that's how I got into the business I'm in, just by, I don't know how I got into it, but I'm in it now. So I'm selling orthopedic implants today. And that's what I do. But all through the Navy, I drank. You know, that's all I did was drink. I was responsible to my job duties most of the time. I say most of the time, but I didn't miss work a whole lot when I was back then. When I missed work is when I got out of the Navy. Zip, speed forward here a little bit, fast forward. I got out of the Navy in 1981-ish, and I got a job in medical sales because one of the guys who used to come in and sell to us in the operating room said, "Hey, man, you'd be good at sales. Why don't you come in and get in sales with us?" And went and got an interview and got the job and learned that there's a lot of entertaining to be done in medical sales. And I had to go out a lot at night. No problem there. Got to drink a lot at night on the company's tab. And it was just a lot of fun. And for a lot of years, I had a lot of fun drinking. You know, I break my drinking down into three categories. My 20s, my 30s, and my 40s. My 20s, it was a lot of fun. My 30s, it was a lot of fun with problems. And my 40s was all problems. That's the way I break down my drinking career. Because I had a lot of fun in my 20s drinking. When it caught off to me is when I was about 30 years old. I got to be close to 30 years old. I'm missing a lot of stuff, but my son was born when I was 22. So I had a son when I was 22. Michael, he lives here in Tampa now. He's going to be 30 next year. Amazing. Save a seat for him, by the way. He might need one over there. I don't know, but I'm just saying. I'm not judging, I'm just saying now. I know my son pretty well. He's a fish head. You know what fish heads are? Yeah. Yeah, okay. He's a fish head. My son was born when I was 22, and I was married at the time, actually. Married to a girl named Tammy, who's my ex-wife. I have a current wife now. You all know her. And I was married. I got married when I was 22, and that's just the wrong age to get married. I'm sorry. 22 is just way. I should have been married at 30. Thank you. I should have been married at 30 years old. You know, let alone 22. But I got married at 22. It lasted a year and a half. Got divorced, and then I went on a spree of different relationships. My relationships always overlapped. I couldn't get out of one until I had another one. You know what that's all about? Anybody ever hear about that? It was all my low self-esteem is what it all boils down to. I'm just an inferiority guy. I got problems. I got issues. That's why I'm here. I'm here because I'm not all there. But all these relationships are going on. And then I met this girl named Camille. And this is where my AA journey really starts. Camille had just gotten out of treatment. And she was on, what's that stuff you take that makes you throw up if you drink? Anabuse. Hey, yeah, everybody says, all one time, Anabuse. I like that. I'm in the right place tonight. Wow. She was on Anabuse, and I met her in a bar. Now, why is she in a bar? I don't know. It was St. Patrick's Day I met her at, in St. Patrick's Day, probably 1987. And I met her in a bar, and she was drinking, and she's telling me all about this Anabuse she's on. She just got out of rehab, and we're drinking drink for drink, and I'm falling in love with this girl because she can put them down like I can. So anyway, so we moved in together 2 days later. We did. What can I tell you? And that relationship lasted for, actually it was on and off, very turbulent. Very turbulent for about a year and a half, 2 years. But the point is, by meeting her, I got into AA. Because she started going back to AA a month after I met her, and we started dating. I'm hot tonight. Shoot. We started dating, and she went back to AA because she had to. She started puking all the time because of Anabuse, I guess. But she had this guy who would always call her in the morning. His name was Kirk. And Kirk lived in Key West. We were in Baltimore or something like that. And Kirk was like her ex-boyfriend, always trying. And he was in AA, always trying to get her back in the program. He'd always call right at the very inopportune times. You know, like first thing in the morning when we're like totally hungover and there's beer bottle. You remember the beer bottle sitting around with cigarette butts in them and all that crap. God, I never want to forget that sight. Because I never want to go back there. But he'd call every morning and she'd talk to him about AA and it just made me sick to my stomach. I hated it. And then she ended up going back to AA, so I didn't want to lose her, so I went back to AA. I went to AA with her. You know, I wasn't quite ready yet, I don't think. I still thought I could control my drinking at the time. But I went to AA with her and then we broke up. And then we got back together. And then we broke up. Then we got back together, all in AA. I wonder why they say don't get in relationships early on in AA. I have no idea. But I wasn't ready for Alcoholics Anonymous yet. I was there for her. I wasn't there for Paul. You know, I wasn't there for myself. But we finally did split up for good, and I finally did come to AA for good in 87, and I put together 6 years of sobriety. And I was doing the deal, you know. I had a sponsor. I worked the steps rapidly. I had a home group. I had all the stuff we do now. And I met my wife, actually, in AA this particular time. And I don't know if she told you last week or not, but she had to make amends to me. That's how we met. We met at the AA club. I was 4 years sober. She was 4 years sober. We were both out of relationships at the time. We had both been out of relationships for about a year, which is amazing when you're in your early 30s. But she came up to me to make amends to me and that she had broken my anonymity. And I said, oh, no problem. You want to go to the movies? What else are you going to say? You know, Krista's, you know Krista. She's just a super girl. And, last week you got to hear the good Guzzo. This week you get to hear the bad Guzzo. I'm sorry. It's, you know, and the men in the room tonight, I'm going to say it to you guys, not to the women, but the women who go out with us are angels. They put up with our shit. They're angels. I tell you what, because I put my wife through living hell. 6 years into being sober, I was doing really well in my business. Things were going good, and I started to develop resentments towards some people who I was close to in Alcoholics Anonymous, people in my business, and my family, my dad. I had these resentments that I was not dealing with a 10-step or just even talking to anybody about. And I'll tell you what, I know today that resentments, and I believe exist. Well, I know it says it in the book, but sometimes you got to live it to believe what it says in the book, that resentments are the number one offender. You know, they kill more alcoholics than anything. And these resentments just ate at me. I was just so miserable. I started to turn, like I said earlier, you know, I never wanted to be like my dad. And I turned right into him. Well, in these 6 years of sobriety that I had, I started to turn into a normal person. Well, not normal, but a little better of a person. And but with these resentments building up and stopping going to meetings, stopping calling my sponsor on a regular basis, stopping to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous newcomers. You know, the drink is the last sign of a relapse, guys. I'm telling you right now. I was sicker, and people saw me getting sicker way before I ever picked up a drink. And, you know, we can see it. We can see it in the guys that we sponsor. You all girls can probably see it in the girls you sponsor. But we can't do anything about it. I mean, we can maybe tell them what's going on, but, you know, you can only lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink it. Anyway, so I went out again. I went out then. And it took me until 2002 to really put any time back together again. I tried coming back into AA a few times, put a couple years together each time. And I still think, you know, I was kind of doing it for to salvage my marriage more than anything. And for some reason, when I say, you know, women are angels who go out with us, why she never left me all these years, I have no idea. But she didn't. Well, she did. She finally did, and it was a good thing. 10? 5? The most important part of my life so far to this point was the weeks, months preceding up to coming in Alcoholics Anonymous on March 2nd, 2002. And Krista had moved out of the house because she couldn't put up with my drinking anymore. You know, I was living a life of a playboy bachelor again, but I had a wife that I was still living with. I was going out at night, coming home, whenever I wanted to. One night she came home and found me. Actually, I came home. She was already home. I pulled up in the driveway, passed out in the driveway. She came out in the morning and found me with the stereo blasting. I had some Bruce Springsteen gone. Good stuff. I had blast loud, too. Windows all down in my driveway. Passed out with a cigarette hanging out of the car. And the neighbors walk up and down walking their dogs. It's 8:30 in the morning. Nice vision, isn't it? And she came out and woke me up. That's one thing I never want to forget. I don't want to forget that. You know, that's I'm embarrassed by it. It's humiliating. It was then. It is today. But I don't want to ever forget that because I can use that to help another person. That's when she moved out. She stayed out for about a year. I made all these, please come back. Oh, please come back. I'm going to change. And she bought it. And she came back. I changed. I went to meetings for a week. And I drank again. And that was like, you know, in March. I mean, that's February 2002. I came home one night, and she told me she was moving. She was moving out. She had an apartment. She was moving out to West Tampa. And I was like, and I was furious. I had no right to be furious. I was furious. And so I went into the closet, I got all her clothes, and I helped her move. I threw them all out in the front yard. The rage was coming out of me. It's total assholism. And and then I threw all her clothes out, and then she called some people over to help her. Then she was going to leave. This is the stupidest thing I've ever done in my life. I laid down behind her car so she wouldn't leave. I was just a drunk idiot. That's all I was. Don't awe me. It's stupid. Don't even awe me there. I was just a drunk idiot. If any of my sponsees called me up and said, hey, I'm laying behind my wife's car, I would say, let me put your wife on the phone. Run her over. That's probably what I would say. But she didn't. She didn't run over. I got up, and then she left, and that was my last night. I went out and drank, and this tie went on that night. I called my sponsor the next morning, who was my sponsor at one time, John. John called me up. I called John. I said, John, I can't do it anymore. And he said, meet me at the... I forget what meeting it was at. It was in Temple Terrace. I knew where it was at. I have no idea where the meeting was because I was totally out of it. I met him at the meeting. He said to me, bring up the topic tonight. I said, bring up the topic tonight? What are you talking about bringing up the topic tonight? So I brought the topic up. I have no idea what I brought up. After the meeting, we're talking to my sponsor and another guy named Carl. And Carl told John, Paul ain't going to make it. And John said, you're probably right. He ain't going to make it. And now here, I'm listening to them tell me, say this to me, that I'm not going to make it. But I was hurting. I was really hurting. And the next day, I went over to John's office, and so John got me down with me and John and John's sponsor, Walter. And the three of us got together and reviewed first step and the second step and the third step together. And they both looked at me and said, my sponsor said to me, he goes, Paul, you know, your chances are slim to none of staying sober this time unless you change everything about yourself. Everything. And what he was referring to was going through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where the change comes from, this psychic change. So we immediately got into the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, he did not slow down. He got right into it. The first and second step, as it refers to in the third step in the 12 and 12, they are reflection only. So we talked a lot about them. And we got in, and we went to the church down here in downtown Tampa. I forget what it's called. They have a Wednesday meeting down there. And we went down and went into a little play school room. It's a little kindergarten room. You know, little chairs like this big. We sat there. We read like this. We read the third step together. And then we got down on our knees in that room. He held my hand. I held his hand. And he told me to read the third step out of the book. I read the third step out of the book. Third step prayer out of the book. Excuse me. And I started to cry. And he says, "It's a good thing you're crying because I didn't want to go through this again." So I guess he meant he could see a profound change taking place. And then he pointed out in the big book where the fourth step says, next and at once, we commence to continue on. I'm terrible at paraphrasing. But it says next and at once, we do the fourth step. We don't waste any time. We don't take a break and take a trip to the Bahamas or do whatever we think we should be doing. We got to get into it right away because it will have little permanent effect. Unless at once followed by the strenuous house cleaning. I did a fourth step with him. I did a fifth step with him. And that was all within the first month of sobriety. I'm not saying to brag. I'm saying because I say it because I really believe by doing it that rapidly, I'm still here tonight, 8 years later. Did my 6 and 7 step that night, you know, by myself, reflecting about the first 5 proposals. Got with him a week later and wrote out my 8-step list with him. He reviewed each one of them, went over them. We kind of did a rehearsal how I was going to do the 9-step. And to this day, I've done all the people I could do. I've still got some financial amends with the IRS. And I'm working on this, and there's a lot of progress that's been made. And today I'm trying to live the progress, the growth steps of 10, 11, and 12. You know, I do a 10-step most days, not every day. I forget, I get lazy, I get slothful, whatever you want to call it. That reminds me, somebody asked me the other day, do I pray every morning? I do most days, but a lot of days I don't. I forget. You know, there's an old saying: we should take your slippers and throw them under the bed at night. You know, and so in the morning you get on your knees and get your slippers out. I say, throw your Blackberries or iPhones under the bed, because that's where we're going to go for first anymore: is Blackberries and iPhones. God forbid we live without Facebook nowadays. But anyway, so I work those steps the best of my ability, and. I have a home group, and it's Friday Night Lights. My home group has been sober at 7 for the last 8 years. I just recently changed, and it's a big deal. It's a big deal. It's hard to do. But we have a group down in Apollo Beach that meets every Friday night at 7:30, double speaker meeting. Monica will be there in 2 weeks. And we need support there as home group members, because it was kind of floundering around with a couple guys who were using it like as their second home group. It was like the poor stepchild of Sober 7 is what I felt like it was. So I decided, I talked to my sponsor, and we decided that, yeah, pick one home group and do it right. You know, spread yourself out too thin and do multiple home groups and just do a little bit of each home group. Just do one and do it right. That's all there is to it, you know. I don't understand this thing about multiple home groups anymore. I mean, it seems to be a growing epidemic around Alcoholics Anonymous to have more than one home group. You can only vote one time at the district level, so why only stick with one? When I got up here tonight, I didn't say my name is Paul, my sobriety date is March 2nd, 2002, and I have 15 home groups. Let me read them all off to you. I didn't do that, did I? No. I'm sorry. It's my little thing. My little soapbox I'm on right now. Single home groups. These guys are laughing. They know exactly where I'm coming from. But anyway, Kevin, what a great year he had, you know. And he did. He came in about 5 months when he was sober, and he's done the work. He's done the deal. It's funny when you sponsor somebody, you know. It's so many times it's like looking in a mirror. Kevin is just like I was, and still am today. You know, hard-headed, opinionated, and working on it though. You know. He's growing. I mean, and when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I still thought there was only one way to do it, and that was Paul's way. Today I know there's only one way to do it, and it's God's way. And I get that direction from everybody in this room. You know, we're all children of God. You know, and I judge my sobriety today by when I look out and see faces like this. If you guys all look happy, then my program's probably doing good. If you guys all look crappy, my program's probably being crappy. You know what I mean? So... you guys look great tonight, so I think I'm going to stop there because I'm feeling good. Thank you for my time and my sobriety.